Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. This is Mary Davidson, one of your co-hosts, and in today's episode, we are deep diving into accessibility at events, and we have a wonderful guest on to chat about this important topic. So before we do have one call to action for you today in this new year. We have a survey that we'd love for you to take before the episode, after the episode, in the next week, just whenever works for you, but please take note of this. We have a link in the show notes. It could take up to 10 minutes, but if you're a fan of the show or you've been a fan for a while, this would be a really great way to give back. This survey helps us. It captures a lot of data, which is why it's pretty lengthy. So we're giving you a heads up about that, but it would be really helpful to learn, you know, how you listen to the podcast, where you listen to it, what you like about it, what you dislike about it. And so please take some time if you're willing to fill out the survey. We will link it in the show notes. And with that, let's get into our episode for today.
Welcome to the Better Events Podcast. Join two event strategists, Logan Clements and Mary Davidson, who believe we can all create, host, and attend better events. In this podcast, you will learn about event strategy and actions that you can use today as an event host, planner, or manager. Hear directly from the people are creating innovative and inspiring events today and tomorrow, and grow your business along the way. Now, let's get started, and thanks for listening to the Better Events Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. I'm Logan Clements, and I'm joined by fellow co-host Mary Davidson. And this week, we are so excited to talk about accessibility at events with our guest, Meg Straley. And I just want to save as much time as we can for this interview, so before, Mary, I have you chime in, I'm going to introduce our lovely guest, Meg. And with a decade worth of education and experience across the events, hospitality, and tourism industry in the US, UK, and Australia, Meg Straley has taken her passion for sustainability to join the Bulb in 2021 as the newest sustainability manager. She has worked on a variety of projects, including creating the sustainability strategy for an interactive experience at COP26, supporting a global ISO certification process, and producing the equality, diversity, and inclusion strategy to drive social sustainability for the opening and closing ceremonies for the Birmingham Commonwealth Games. Wow, Meg, this is amazing. Is there anything else you would like to add to your lovely bio?
No, the only other thing that I also do, because we're going to be talking about accessibility in this episode, is I also advocate for accessibility and inclusion to be included in all conversations that the events industry has been having lately.
That is so awesome. And we're just so thrilled to have you. So thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast. And we like to do a little bit of why we asked our guests. We do it for all the guests. And when we reached out to you, I reached out to you because I'd heard you on another events podcast, and I think it was maybe a year or more ago, perhaps, I could be wrong, that you were on the podcast, but I had just found it, that episode, and I was listening to it, and I was like, I just gained so much from it, and I was like, wow, we need to get Meg on the podcast. She needs to share all of her wonderful thoughts because this is such an important topic. And we've been trying to dive deeper into these important event topics. And so once again, just thank you for being here and taking the time. And we will just dive into our questions that we have for you today. I'm excited to learn lots. And so what we'd like to do is start off at the very beginning, if you will, just start very basic so that us and our listeners, we can have a really good base understanding before we deep dive into it. And so we're talking about accessibility at events. So how would you, Meg, define accessibility?
So that's an interesting one because everyone sees it in a different way. I define the definition of accessibility online is the design of products or services to benefit everyone. So it's not an afterthought. It's already accessible. People are able to use the product or service without being like, hey, I can't use it because of XYZ. And accessibility in the events industry, I think, is a little bit different. It's the design of the service and the experience to benefit everyone. So it's the same, but it's a little different because we have the opportunity to create experiences for people to come and feel like they're welcome.
Yeah, I think, Meg, you touch on something we like to talk about, I feel like, a lot on this podcast, is about creating those experiences for everyone. And I feel like you just gave the dictionary definition of accessibility, but I just learned that. I was like, oh yes, of course it's forever. It's like talking about equity, especially, you know, on the gender side of things, that it's not, you know, you're not trying to treat someone more than someone else, but all equally. But what would be your take on the current state of the event industry regarding accessibility?
Ooh, it's not a very positive outlook right now. I feel like, you know, since 2020, we all had to stay home and we were all attending events, learning about inclusion, diversity, sustainability, accessibility. Like, we sat and learned about everything. So in 2020, I was like, yes, there's going to be change, there's going to be movement. And then all of a sudden, everyone returned to what they thought was normal. And it seems like they completely forgot everything that they sat down and took the time to talk about and learn. I'm like, ugh, we're back to square one. But there are some platforms doing really well. Like, I love Microsoft Teams. They have captioning and they just introduced live interpreter. So it's an interpreter that is next to the speaker. I haven't tested it because I don't use the interpreter, but it's next to the speaker without getting lost in the row of meeting attendees, which I think is really great. So there are platforms and events doing better, but the progress is still quite slow. But I'm hopeful next year we're going to see a lot more progress.
That's, I think what you said is so true and important. And that's what I was just thinking from the pandemic generally. I was like, oh gosh, we've learned so much. How are we going to remember these hard lessons that we've learned? I think just like from a different perspective, a lot of us learned simplicity because we weren't doing a lot of things, right? And I'm like, how can we make sure we don't go back to like the 0 to 60, like real quick, we're doing everything, yeah, all the things. And so that's, I guess, in a little bit different vein, but I think it's true that we have forgotten a lot of things, including what you mentioned, and have started to learn, but obviously need to dive deeper into. So it's a great reminder. So I'm excited to see what comes in the coming year, and hopefully we can get this out there more widely. And then we wanted to kind of talk through, obviously there's so many different kinds of events, but maybe breaking it down just by type, if that's something that would be okay. And so talking about virtual events, if we can maybe start there and talk about what we can do specifically for virtual events and accessibility. So yeah, I guess that's my first question. What can we do for virtual events to do this better?
So the first thing is to look at the platform and ask them, what do you already have existing? So I don't really attend virtual events anymore because it's not quite accessible for me with the lack of captioning. So I can't quite comment on which platforms are doing well. But you want to ask them, do you have captioning available? And are they able to be turned on and off? You don't want them on all the time because someone that has ADHD or autism might find it distracting and not able to concentrate on the event itself. But it'll benefit someone for me. And this is actually something I learned very recently, is that people with visual impairments use something called, I think it's Hotkey. I don't know why I thought it was typecast. Hotkey compatibility. So what they do on the keyboard is they use shortcuts to be able to reach something else on the platform. I don't know how it works, but it sounds really fascinating. So asking them if they have those compatibilities in place already. And another thing that you want to think about with virtual events that you wouldn't do for in-person events is allowing people to get on the platform early and have a look around and get comfortable with the platform before the event starts. It'll help them, so to speak, find their way around instead of getting lost in all like the sessions, the chat, trying to find like, where's the help desk? So it gives them a little bit of time to get on. And when you are doing sessions with speakers, have a timer, I wanna say timer, like on the screen with the countdown of how much longer until the session, so that lets people know, okay, it's not quite starting yet. And have the chat off while the timer's on, because people with visual impairments will hear the countdown, but the chat might come up strange. So I don't know how it all works because I've never been able to test it out, but those are a few things that I've never thought about before because it doesn't affect me personally. But through conversations with other people, they've mentioned those small things have been really helpful for their events. Oh, and another thing, never thought about. So none of us are wearing super clunky jewelry. Don't wear clunky jewelry because the microphone will pick it up and it can be so, I can't hear it because I have hearing loss. But some people would like zero in on the sound of the clunky and not be able to concentrate on what's being said.
Meg, so true. I have wired headphones that I wear sometimes, and I found not even just clunky jewelry, but also even if you wear, if you have like a zipper, I had a sweater with a quarter zip, and I had someone private message me just in a meeting, letting me know that my microphone was hitting my zipper because I talk with my hands, and it was, you know, they didn't say it was annoying, but I think they could, that was their nice way of telling me. You probably don't want your microphone hitting your zipper. And I was like, I don't. So I like zipped my jacket up all the way. And that solved that problem. But I think it's really interesting to think through, you know, all these different features. And again, I know that all the platforms are constantly changing. That feature you just mentioned for Teams, Zoom has also just launched having a sign language interpreter. I haven't gotten to test it either. But that's something that I know I got excited about. Just again, that they're making these easier and, you know, lower entry, barrier to entry on the cost side. But do you have an example of like a really well done virtual event? I know you said you're not going to them recently, but just something for our listeners to kind of put in their minds.
Yes. Yeah, so this was back in January 2021, I believe. Do you guys know TEDx?
Yeah.
So TEDx London Women's puts on an event every year. And this was the first one since lockdown. And they were trying to figure out the best way to do it virtual. And I was like, this sounds really interesting. The women are super diverse from like different backgrounds, different knowledge, climate, just anything and everything. So I was like, I might as well attend. It's all day. It was 9 to 5 on a Saturday. I was like, I don't know if it has captioning, and that's a lot of work for me to sit there on a Saturday and not know if it's going to be accessible or not. And I signed up like a week before, so I forgot to mention, can you have captioning? So I get on the platform and there's captioning. I didn't even have to ask. And they had people from different backgrounds, different disabilities. Just, it was the most inclusive and accessible event I've ever attended in my life, and it's 2 years later, I'm still talking about this event as a good example of what we should be doing at events, because when I have to ask for something, I have to trust that the other person will make it happen. And that doesn't always quite happen. There's been times I asked for captioning and there wasn't any. I think I would message them privately being like, you said this was going to happen. And sometimes people get a little snarky because they're stressed about the event. They're trying to juggle. Like, I understand. I work in the industry. I understand. But you don't need to be snarky with me. I'm just trying to go to your event and enjoy the event. So the TEDx London, you can actually see them, the sessions on YouTube still. So TEDx London Women's, the 2021 and 22 event is on there. I highly recommend.
That is such a good example. And it made me think too, communicating ahead of time to let the attendees know that there even is the captioning option, for example. I have never thought to do that. It's something I've thought to implement during the actual event, but not to communicate that it is available. I think that's really cool. And I was working with one client, this brings this to mind as well, but they really wanted to focus in on this. And they said, any information that we can give folks ahead of time is only going to help them prepare or even decide if they want to attend. And so thank you for that example. That's really helpful. And before we move on to live events, is there anything else that you want to comment or mention about virtual events and accessibility?
So one thing, it also relates to when you're giving presentations and live events, is that a lot of times people will have GIFs or moving images in their presentations, and that can be a little bit distracting. So when you put them in your presentation, you want to have them frozen and then press play. So instead of having it play automatically, you want to have it press play and then stop. So I didn't realize that it could be distracting, but I've met a lot of people who've mentioned that they just like focus on what's playing instead of what the person's saying.
I had one more follow-up question for you, Meg, on the virtual side, and it does apply really to live as well. I feel like, because a lot of the arguments that I see is the cost associated with accessibility. And I hate that that's what it comes down to. But for like example, captions, a lot of these platforms have integrated free versions, including YouTube has free captions now. But then there's also the, I don't know what the term is, but it's, you know, the humans behind. So human transcribed live captions. And that is usually a much higher cost. So I find a lot of my clients, if they go for it, they want the, you know, the lower cost, the free, the included. Do you find that those captions are just like, are they as effective, or is it really, that's just kind of, I don't know, just kind of a cop out in terms of doing the auto captions versus the extra effort to actually hire a human behind it?
So for me personally, I love to see the effort. I want to see the effort that people are trying. And I've been using captions for however many years, 30 plus years on TV, movies, everything. So I am good at quickly reading and understanding and processing. But that's because I have 30 years of experience and practice doing that, while someone else who maybe is English a second language might be like, what I understand, and they're trying to stumble over it. But there is someone that I follow on LinkedIn called Meryl Evans. She is deaf, and she often will test out captioning capabilities, give feedback, and talk about it on her LinkedIn. And I love following her because she shares so many good insights that I don't have the energy. It's not what I do for work. But she just shares things like, for example, did you know that iPhones 12 and up have captioning available? So when you're on a phone call, you can turn it on and it transcribes. So she tests out things like that and feedbacks. And I love going on her page and seeing, because you see website things, you see platform things, you see technology things. I'll share the link with you so you can put it in the chat later.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes, and I'm excited to check that out too. So I'm glad to hear that someone is doing that. It's going to be really helpful to see. And then, so I guess transitioning into live events, we've touched on them a little bit already, but just generally, what can we do for live events to help them be more accessible?
So just like virtual events, take a look at where the event is being hosted. So the venue itself, as a rule, I tell people, if it doesn't have good wheelchair access, don't even put it on your list. You know, they don't have any excuse now. We're going into 2023. You need to upgrade your buildings to be more accessible. Just don't even put it on the list if there's no wheelchair access, because with disability, it's not always visible. Like, what if your keynote speaker broke their leg 3 days before the event and is in a wheelchair? You paid $30,000 for this person to come and speak at your event, and then all of a sudden he can't get in because you chose a non-accessible venue. And you don't want to choose a venue that the person has to go around back, up a surface elevator, and through the kitchen to get to the event, because we want to get in through the front, just like anyone else. So I was thinking about, the first thing is thinking about the venue. And the next thing is thinking about design. How can we design to make sure we're not unintentionally excluding anyone? So for me, because of my hearing loss, I need carpeting, which is an interesting debate because I work in sustainability and people are trying to get rid of carpeting. I'm like, no, there are sustainable options. You can rent carpets. You can buy carpets made from recycled plastics. You can do so much more things. And some companies are doing take back programs. So they take the carpet back and turn it into new carpet. Or the venue should have the responsibility to have 3 or 4 carpet choices. And that's what you choose from. Because I know clients can get a little fussy about color. But I need carpeting because it helps prevent the echo of sound. So when I go to like a large expo and there's no carpeting, it's just so much noise and feedback that I can't concentrate. And even people without a hearing disability feedback on that. So it's just thinking about the design. And recently I went to IBTM in Barcelona, and they're trying really hard to be better at these things. But I did notice that there were some wheelchair users, and almost all of the stands had at least an inch platform. So there's no way that the person could get on the platform to do business. And I was like, one, that's also a trip hazard. I don't know about you guys. I am super clumsy. I'm not always looking down and see this thing there. But as people with disabilities also want to do business, and the design is preventing us from doing business. And getting rid of those platforms is also sustainable, because that's one less build you have to do. So it's just thinking about the design and also the ambience, the noise, the background. Are there any events going on next door to your venue at the same time that will affect the noise? I spoke at an event in London about 6 or 7 months ago, and there was a massive event built next door, and I was talking about accessibility. Like, that was my talk, and all you can hear is just drilling, hammering. And I was like, if anyone has any questions, you're going to have to come up to me and ask me, like, here, because I can't even hear myself speak. So asking what is happening at the same time around that will potentially disrupt your events. That was a lot. I'm sorry.
No, this is all you've got. I feel like both, I can see Mary's wheels turning as my wheels are turning, of just like all really important things. And I feel like the decision makers forget about some of this stuff. I know some of Mary and my frustration is when we get brought in to execute a piece of it, or the production side, or, you know, when some of those decisions have been made. But that's so crucial. And you just, I worked the US Open, the tennis this year in New York. And that was something with our wheelchair athletes versus our able-bodied athletes. The entrance was completely different. And we had to make a call to have them go to a different this entrance that was farther away, but they were able to kind of move at pace, versus the elevator that they had was really slow. And if anything, the athletes were like, we don't want to do that. We'd rather you just let us, we'll go farther around to take the ramp, and I'm in control of, you know, my body the entire way, versus sitting and waiting for a very slow elevator. And it was just something I was like, you don't think about it till you're faced with it. And fortunately, we want as planners to get ahead of those things, so you already have that plan, so that everyone feels included. It's a great list. I feel like I need to make a checklist for our listeners. But anything else that we should be thinking about?
I am working on a thought leadership piece that should be coming out in the new year, so please do keep your eyes up for that. For live events, I haven't quite attended a really great one. I haven't been to IMEX yet, but someone I spoke with said that IMEX thought about the small things as well, like the design of the floor, placement of signage, and just the way they did things was really, like, really good. I tried to get in touch with the team at IMEX to hear about how they did it, but haven't been able to hear back. I know they're very busy. So I have heard that they think about it. They have a team that works to put those pieces in place to make sure that it's accessible. She mentioned that she has ADHD, so it's hard for her to focus. But the way they did colors, the way they did signs, text, and all of that was really good for her. So I guess maybe I'll have to go next year and see for myself. But also thinking about the placement of signage, and just where are you putting things? Because a lot of events are doing now apps. I don't know about you. I'm not quite, I should be tech savvy, but I'm really not tech savvy. If you give me an app, I'm going to be like, where is G27? I'm in F32. Like, where am I supposed to be going? So just thinking about signage and the placement and getting people to go where they're supposed to be going. It work is for everyone, not just for people with accessibility needs. It's for everyone.
I know Logan's ears are probably ringing because we talk about signage a lot, just in general. Logan loves some signage, and she says you can never have enough. So absolutely agree with that. And if you go to IMEX, let me know. We're trying to go next year, so holler at us if you're going to be there. But so another thing that's important to cover is the language that we use when talking about accessibility, whether it's in events or not. And sometimes I think folks, they don't know what to say or how to say it, and it's just kind of this learning curve. And so in regards to the language that we use, especially maybe in event communications, do you have any advice or what would you say we should look out for regarding the language that we use?
Yeah, so language is a tricky one because even I struggle with it. And I think one thing that many people are so afraid of is making mistakes, because with social media, you get called out, especially if the mistakes were unintentional, and that fear holds you back because you don't want it to be blasted for the whole world to see, and then it lives on forever in the cloud or the social media first. So I do find that people are afraid to take that step forward and ask those really uncomfortable questions, because the most important thing to do is ask. My language that I prefer will be different from someone else. So I am deaf, but I call myself hard of hearing because I have support that helps me hear well. And I also grew up in the hearing community, not the deaf community, but someone else might prefer to be called deaf or hearing impaired or something, and avoid using negative. So I don't like the word impairment because it sounds negative, and I don't think that my hearing loss is negative. So avoid like, oh, I'm sorry, you're in the wheelchair, or, oh, you know, that sucks. Yeah, yes, we know it sucks, but it's something we live with and we take it. We don't think it's negative. It's just something that we go through on our day-to-day life. So the first thing, always ask. Don't be afraid to have those uncomfortable conversations, because you're not going to learn otherwise. And it's okay to make mistakes. You know, it's just get through that embarrassment, learn from the mistake, and then try to share what you've learned with other people so they don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah, Meg, I had a question for you kind of spinning off of that, of just ask kind of thinking. I know a lot of event organizers and hosts will often put something on their registration form, whether that's asking if there's any, I think the phrasing I've seen is like accommodations need to be made, or any, I can't think of now another way to say it, but have you found, like, is that in your opinion a helpful way or a very like easy way for a host to kind of better understand their audience to make sure that they are making their event as accessible as possible?
Yes. The one thing that you should do when you put an open box asking if you have any accommodations that a person might need is also add a deadline for it, and also an email contact, because there's been some times where I fill out the form and then I have a question, and then I'm on the website looking for a contact person. I email the info, but nobody responds to the info email because there's thousands of emails in there. So it's having a deadline to give you your team time to be able to accommodate those needs, but also an email contact so that the person can reach out if there's any concerns or if they thought of something else later.
That's very important. I hadn't even thought about that, of having a specific contact person to help, like you're saying, those info ats or whatever email that you put as like the public facing for the whole event can definitely get bogged down with different emails at times.
Another thing that I also learned is that when people who have visual impairments, they use VoiceOver or something, Siri, on their phone to find emails, it would be incredibly helpful if you're sending out event comms to include the event name and the date and time and location and your subjects. I know it seems like a lot, but it makes it easier for people to find it through all the emails that they're getting.
Absolutely. Thank you for these thoughts and then resources as well. We'd love to capture some resources that maybe you would suggest, and we can put all these in the show notes, but just anywhere we as event professionals can go, or yeah, any resources that you have, we're open to them.
Yeah, so the first one is the American with Disabilities Act. They'll have tons of resources on your website that are also event specific. And the next one, if you're an event organizer or an event team and you're looking to hire someone with disabilities, you can post jobs at abilityjobs.com. I actually just discovered it quite recently, and like even Meta, Facebook, I can't call it Meta, Facebook is on there as well, hiring people. And there's accessibility.com that has resources for people and for businesses to go in and learn more. And the last one is find a charity. There's charities that do trainings, education, outreach. And if you have someone on your team that has a disability and they need support, tons of charities do that. There's one for Tourette's, visual impairments, the deaf community. There's a charity for everything that also does trainings for teams and businesses.
All right. We'll have them all in the show notes for our listeners. I highly encourage you to take a look. Well, while we have you, Meg, was there anything else you wanted to add with talking about accessibility in events?
Just keep trying to grow and learn. Like, it's not something that you learn and then that's done. It's like the landscape is constantly changing. So don't be afraid to keep learning and asking the hard questions.
Thank you so much. We've really appreciated our time with you today. I know we've had lots of thoughts, and I feel like we'll probably debrief after the slogan and be like, all right, how are we going to implement this in our coming events? And so thank you for getting our brains thinking, and hopefully our listeners' brains are thinking more about this as well. And hopefully we can circle back with you too and see what the state of the industry and accessibility is next year and see what the changes are. Hopefully more better changes. And so thank you for the work that you're doing in the space. And can you also just let us know where listeners can find you if they want to follow along on your journey?
Yeah, so I used to be findable on Twitter, but that has gone on a downhill slope. So I am now more findable on LinkedIn at Meg Straley.
With that, we just say thank you again. And we end our episodes with a bonus tip. So we're going to pass it back over to Logan. But before we do, just thank you so much again, Meg. Stay in touch and we'll chat with you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Mary, I'm like, how do I think about my bonus tip now? We have so many key takeaways. The listeners, and this is our bonus tip at the end of the episode, and this one is related to your post-event, and I feel like can tie a little bit of some of the things we talked about today, but make sure you schedule your team debrief call before you've actually completed the event. One of the things I often find is we have all this energy in the pre-planning process. The event happens, and then everyone's tired. And so it's really important to make sure that you schedule that team, whether it's even I've done debriefs with myself, which sounds silly, but making sure you have it within about a week of the event. So while things are fresh, I have often found that the longer I have between the event and my debrief, the rosier the picture is in my head. And I don't remember some of the nitty gritty details that really actually make a big difference if I can jot them down and get ahead of them for next year. But make sure you put it on your calendar and your pre-planning process while you have that pre-event energy, rather than waiting until you're done with the event, especially if you're doing it with a team. It's just, again, I did it with a client recently and it was the best thing we could have done because it was already on the calendar after the event wrapped and we were able to have a very efficient team debrief. And it also creates a nice natural end for your event team of once we're done the debrief, we are finished. And if you leave that open-ended, it can leave your team wanting more.
I love it. Thank you so much, Logan. And thanks so much, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. If you'd like to give us a follow, you can find us on Instagram at Better Events Pod. And also just send us an email. We love to hear from you at bettereventspod@gmail.com. So thank you so much again for listening. And we will be back with you again next week. Thanks, everybody.